accession number 31439, Mr. Tom Latham, Reel 5. Now, we've got to the point where you've taken over from the American troops on Hill 238, back in the Koang Sang area, as we call it. So what happened next then?
Well, starting off with that they had more positions than what we did. So some of the bunkers that would be blown up, that was further down the hill, because they had more troops and we just occupied the tops of the hills. But we kept the listening.
Who did that, the destruction bit? Would you do that yourselves?
No, we were told. We were told what bunkers had to be blown up.
That's
and
right, you did
in.
It.
Yeah, oh yes, because they'd gone.
How did you actually do it?
Well, we filled them in mainly, destroyed them so they couldn't be occupied. You know, take the roofs off and things like that, and they still couldn't hide in them and things like that if they'd come up the hill with the patrols, like, you know. And the sort of incidents happened out there was we had to do listening patrols now, which we didn't before. And these listening patrols were about maybe 200 yards to 300 yards in front of the position, and you used to go down there at like last light, and you'd take up positions, and you'd a lance jack or corporal and three other ranks, and it was just a matter of listening. And there was one little incident when I was down there with the other ranks, and they used to do two on and two off. And I'm inside with another chap, and the guard comes in and says, it's a movement out there. So he gets up, and the four of us go out there, and we're all standing too, and you could definitely hear someone coming up the hill. It wasn't, because we used to get deer around there, and he used to frighten the lives out of people, but this was cracking and stopping, and it wasn't like four legs. It might have been a deer, but we used to know that. Of course, and I had to phone back to the command post and say, we're standing two, there's movement out here, and it'll go quiet. And then the most frightening thing used to happen was they'd phone back, and the phone would ring, and the noise, you know, it was unbelievable that you could be in a position where you was hidden in a bunker, and the enemy's patrol was coming up, and the phone would ring, you know. But that's a little incident, and when nothing happened, we came back in the morning, and when we got back, the sergeant, Wild Goose his name was, he came up and said, did you disconnect the grenades? So I thought, no. So me and another chap had to go down, and what it was, you see, is where the path, it is the path that used to go out on patrols, and it's also the one you used to come back in, we used to get a grenade, and we'd take the pin out, and put it inside a tin can. The tin can was wedged in the branch of a tree, and a tripwire went across, done that. So as soon as they caught the wire, they pulled the grenade out. So we had to go back down this parachute hill in daylight, and there used to be three we used to do, and disconnect these grenades. Yes, and we had to go down and undo the string from one side of the wire and take the grenades out, put the pin back in, and just place them back in the can, and just leave them there for the next patrol that would do it on the night time. Patrols were quite regular, because we was it was more regular than what they were in the Samachon, and they used to go out and do ambush patrols, and listening patrols, not so much fighting patrols.
What do you remember, any ambush patrol come to mind?
No, not with us. There was...
What were they like? What do you remember of them?
Well, the only one I can remember coming out was we're coming down the hill to go into the valley, and the wireless operator lost his aerial. So everyone's hunting around for this aerial. Most of them didn't want to find it, because if they didn't find the wireless, we wouldn't go on patrol. You know, no one was brave. And one of the chaps I've met afterwards, he was on the patrol with me, named Von Gramlich, and he said, if I'd have found it, I'd have just broke it up, like I wouldn't have said nothing. But we went out on this patrol, and there wasn't a lot of action. They see the enemy coming off the hill in daylight, so we had to go and try and find. There was about a dozen of us, it would be Corporal Wilmot. And we see something moving. I wasn't a brain gunner. We see something moving, he told the brain gunner to open up. But they were the sort of little incidents that went on. There wasn't a lot to start off with, like, you know.
What happened there? What's the next thing you remember?
Right. We got a bashing of shells. It was on the 22nd of April. We hadn't been on the position long. And it lasted... Well, in the book it says about 2 hours, but you can't judge, really.
And what was it like, Ben? Shellfire?
It's terrible, because you're just in... The bunkers weren't shellproof. You were safer in a trench. the dugout, the bunkers weren't shellproof. And but no one was injured. No single person on the record in Norfolk Book was injured on that account.
And that was on the 20.
That was the 22nd of April. I've got it showing for 2 hours. They just kept coming down. There was another incident when the cookhouse, because the cookhouse was always on the reserve slope of the hill in a little valley, and we was down there one lunchtime, and we got mortared, and the mortars were more deadly than shells because they went up and come straight down, and we just all scattered, but the cook got hit, and a new cook took over, who I've met, and I think his name was Des Brown, I think his name was, and I've met him, and he's you know, and he knew the cooks, it was just a catering corps, and he's about the last person I've met. When it comes to food, with the mess tins, because you used to have to use your mess tins for washing in, and used to go down just the rear slope a little way, and I used to boil up a container of hot water. You go down with your two mess tins, get hot water, and your tin mug for cold water. And you used to have to wash and shave in the mess tins, and tip them away, clean them, and go down, have your breakfast, dinner, lunch, tea, or whatever meal was, really, generally breakfast, obviously.
Now, you wanted to say about the latrines, about the lack of illness, because
there was an incident now. My corporal got wounded. It was an accident. He was on a jeep, and it was on a lorry. They'd gone back to A Echelon to see a concert, and his mate was with him, and they jumped off the back, and his mate's Bren gun went off and shot him in the thigh. So he went back, and I got made up Lance Jack.
Now, what difference did that make?
It was just that he was in control of a section, which should be 10 men, including yourself, but it never was, because we just never had enough men. And I could have had about five or six in my section. And he was just in charge of them, simple as that. It was as simple as that. There wasn't a lot of bullying. There was no... Because we were all mates, I just got the stripe and that was it. But the incident was that... this time, it comes in with being charged, and it comes in with hygiene, right? Now, I was charged three times. The first time was at Colchester.
Well, let's drop that in now. Tell us that story. Yeah.
When we've gone back to Colchester, this mate of mine, this Reg Griggs, he was a smart lad. We was on the last guard duty at Hyderabad Barracks in Colchester, in the Essex, and he got stick man, which meant the best man, and he got the night off. And I got charged for being scruffy, I suppose. I can't remember what I got charged, but I got charged. But when we got to Germany, that got lost in transit. Right? That was the first time. The second time was with this turnout when I was a Lance Jack. And we was at stand two. And I've got took short. You could get took short anywhere. So I'm enjoying myself on my naffy box. And the major come round at the guard post. And there's no corporal or Lance Jack in charge. So someone sat out, Latham! So, of course, I've come down, like, you know, and I've been on the toilets, like, you know. And, of course, with the toilet, as I said before, it was just newspaper. You had no facilities to wash your hands. Where they get all this nowadays, where you have to wash your hands in hospitals and that, there was no outbreak of any type of disease to anywhere I spoke to. No one had cough, cold, flu, nothing. All through the winters, no one was medically ill, anything like that. So I've come down and I've stood at attention like, and he said to me, what it was then, you see, where this guard post was the main exit on this hill for going out on patrol. And the stakes that you used to stick in the ground to tie your barbed wire around, we used to make what they call gates out of those, and they were joined together with radio wire. So of course, during the course of the day, we had to make a new one, so it got damaged, and all we had was a metal frame, no barbed wire on it. So you could have drove a double-decker bus with it, so it wasn't put in position. And he panicked and said, it should be, blah, blah. And I got charged. Right, it's the second one. So I goes, Sergeant books me, and I goes in front of him the next morning, all smart and the rest of it. And he explained why. So I told him, you know, they could have crawled through it. It wouldn't have going to stop anything, but it's beside the point. And I got reprimanded on that occasion. But there's another charge to come along later on.
Okay, that makes sense. So... What's the next incident or thing you remember?
Well, we just had breakfast. We hadn't No, it's a lie. We just stood down, and we were scruffy, unshaven the rest of it, and then the guard people said there's someone coming up the hill. When we turned around, there's two Koreans walking up. God, am I smart? They come walking up that path where this gate was done by now. They come right up to the gate. Right, we called office and the gate was open and they come in. And one of my mates took the red star badge, and the officer managed to get the other one. And apparently they said they was counter spies or something, you know, because you heard all these little rumours. But they were friendly, and they just went over the hill, and I've given them drinks, and they've put in a jeep with their escort and taken them back. But it was just
so they weren't deserters.
Possibly, it was, you know, we're not to know. But they were smart. They just come walking all day long, just come walking up the slope.
I mean, mightn't they have been shot?
I think they. Well, to be honest, it must be now neglect because they got too close. They got to, when they finally see people, they put their arms up, obviously, but they'd come right up too close, you know. We're coming to different things happen now. I was sent on a sniper's course. Right? They decided that the Americans had got this night scope out, this super night scope, and two people had to go back to be trained on it. Myself and a Lance Corporal Rosemeyer got picked out of the whole of the regiment. Each regiment just had the one weapon.
Now, why did they pick you, do you think?
I haven't got a clue. I just don't know. I was a decent shot, I must admit, but I just don't know. And we had to go back to echelon. And then the story I wrote was printed. I said we went back for 5 nights, not knowingly, but then it got contradicted and said we only went back for 2. So on record, apparently it was 2 nights. We had to go back to echelon, and there was an American officer there, or sergeant, in charge of us. And he had to show us how to strip his American carbine. And he had to strip this. Right, and we went back, and they showed us how to strip it down and clean it all the rest of it. Now, this was an American carbine, and on it was a headlamp that fitted on the top with a sniper scope sight, and you had a huge battery on your back with leads running to it, which was connected by a webbing belt to bring over the top of your own one. And, of course, it was all the night. We'd done the 2 nights here, apparently, and you had to fire at targets, and it was a very brilliant. You could see it about, I think, about 120 yards, you could see a blur. 100 yards, you could see the outline, and 80 yards, you could fire and you know, you wouldn't miss them. And, but we came back, and we had to do...
So it was a good thing?
It was brilliant. Well, I thought it was absolutely brilliant.
And did you actually get one to bring back with you to the unit?
Yes. Me and Lance Corporal Rosemeyer, from then on, we started doing a patrol about. Because I was after prisoners, right. But that's a later story, because there's another story before that.
Okay, so you trained as a sniper. Did you actually do any sniping?
No, it's just night vision.
Yeah.
Night vision to see. You was placed about what shall I say, without exaggerating, about 60 to 80 feet in front of the patrol, and there was a corporal and two other ranks that was between you and the main patrol. So if you've got difficulty, you could we'll give a whistle and they could come up.
And that, we're going to come to that. I'll leave. So there's another story you said before we come on.
There is another story. This was me third charge. Right. We stood down and I'd washed and shaved in my mess tins like you do, and I'd cleaned them all up. And I've now got to go to breakfast. I've come up there all on my own, walked over the hill, going down the went past me officer's bunker. And as I've gone past, he's come out and he shouted out, "Latham, come back here." And I've gone back and stood to attention. I said, "Sir," he said, "where's your section?" So I thought, well, they're getting ready, sir. We never went down. "I want every section going down, section at a time, blah, blah," and he carried on alarming. So I've turned around and I'm much as swearing under my breath that I've got to go back down the front of the hill again to find positions and sort out my section and tell them to get the finger out. Be Herbie. So he called out Sergeant Wildgoose, who was our sergeant, and I was put on the charge. He charged me for insubordination. And I thought, charming, that's all I need. So I've gone down and I've got my section and gone to, you know, it took a bit of time. We've gone down, had a breakfast and the rest of it. I don't know what happened during the day, like we did or not, but in the afternoon, we got shelled. And it was a huge barrage, and it seems like it went on for ages, but apparently it went on for about a quarter of an hour. But they were just blasting all around us, everywhere they were. And when I come out of my bunker, running down the trench was Private Will Proctor. Sorry. I'll come to his name.
Okay.
I'll come to his name. He was Howe. Harry Howe was coming down the trench. Harry Howe, it was, lived in London. He was coming down the trench and he had blood on his face. He had blood all down his right leg. So me and another chap got him, and this other chap took out a tourniquet out of his rifle. We tied it around his thigh. We pulled his trouser leg up, and it below his knee was just shattered. It was, and the blood was coming out in lumps, and it was laying on the floor like kidneys. It was unbelievable. We put a tourniquet around his leg, and this chap tied it right up till we see the blood stopping. I put a bandage over his lip. His bottom lip was hanging off, just on one little bit. We put a bandage over there, over his lip. Come along was the corporal. Corporal Humphreys was in charge of us. And his right arm was completely blood all over it. So we bandaged him up. And when I took over the section as the Lance Jack from Corporal Wilmot, Corporal Wilmot used to work out the rotas for the stag duties. Right, so it was handed to me. And I had this list. So I went round and I checked all the list and made sure everyone was there. But there was a chap missing. A chap named Church. We found him dead in the bottom of the trench. He'd been killed. And so everyone was all right then. So I then went into the officer's bunker, because he weren't there, found a bottle of, it was either whiskey or rum, I'm not sure what it was, and I started, we used to have little tin cans from the American sea rations, and I started issuing this drink out to all those that wanted. I was just down there issuing it out. It could have been about 5 minutes, and the officer come back, David Smith, and he looked at me and he said, "Latham," he said, "I've heard all about it. I'm taking you off the charge." Right. So, but it turns out, afterwards, I've told this story to Corporal Wilmot when I met him, right? And he says, "It takes a bit of believing, Tom, that you and another Lance Jack called Lance Corporal Cupid was in charge of a platoon, because Humphreys had been wounded." Right? And it turns out was that, because I've met David Smith, and I told him, he said, "I'd gone back to see Marilyn Monroe in a show." Right? I've met Critcher, he's dead now, but when I met Critcher, Corporal Wilmot was there, and I told him about it, he said, "I'd gone back to HQ with Sergeant Wilmot," so that left Corporal Humphreys in charge with two Lance Jacks. Because it was daytime, not a lot used to happen in daytime. Right? So, but then Corporal Humphreys got wounded, so it left us two in charge of the platoon until David Smith come back. And of course, that was my third charge, and I got took off for that one as well.
So we're fairly lucky.
Yeah.
Now, anything else about life in the trenches, just to give us an idea of what it was like?
It was rough when it rained. When it rained...
Well, tell me, because we've talked about the cold, tell me about the rain. Is this the monsoons?
These are the monsoons, and when it rained, it rained. And... you know, you'd see it just pour down the trenches. And lucky enough, the guard, a sentry trench, had an opening to it. And it used to run down the path that we used to go out on patrol from. And, of course, if it rained during the day and you went out at night, everyone was slipping base over apex down this slope till you got to the bottom. Like, you know, it was terrible, but it was. You used to wear I forget what it's called now, like a Mackie thing. And... but yeah, because it used to, you know, the bunkers, you weren't allowed to repair bunks, your bunker. They wouldn't let you do it, and they wouldn't let you spend time on them. And something used to leak, you know. But other than that, when it was hot, it was hot. When it was wet, it was wet, without a doubt, you know.
So what happened next then?
Well, we're getting sort of to the end of it. It's not long now. The next thing was they wanted this... catch these prisoners, and this was called, it had a name to it, Arvis I think it was, but we used to call it the Battle of 118. That was the name of the hill. And this is where the sniper scope came into it. And me and this Lance Corporal Rosemeyer used to do a night about with a patrol, and then he became stomach pain, he became ill, and I'd done the last 5 nights on this patrol.
Now, what were these patrols like? They were all on Hill 118, were they?
They were, no. We the battle for the, I'm going to say the battle for 118, it didn't involve D Company as much as that there was a valley either side of the hill, and we had to guard one valley. It involved mainly B and C Company with a little bit of A. D Company was not involved one little bit. We had to guard the valley to stop the Chinese getting behind it. And that was all our sole job. That's why I had to have the sniper scope. I suppose that was the reason why D Company had it.
So you were going out with patrols into the valley to try and catch Korean prisoners and to dominate the valley?
No. We were guarding the valley.
I thought you said you went out five patrols and trying to get
prisoners. On the hill, involving B and C Company. We just had to guard the valley.
So you weren't out to get prisoners?
No.
Right, gotcha.
Right, no. We was guarding the valley to stop the Chinese getting behind them.
Did the valley have a name?
No, they all the hills did, but I think our one's called Bunker Hill, actually. But the 118. But no, all we had to do was that's why I had a sniper scope. So that I could see right in front to stop anything happening. Now, this was what they'd done then. Now, I don't know. I only read about this afterwards and got comments from different people. Actually happened, right? Because we weren't involved, so we didn't know this sort of thing. What was happening was B and C Company were sending patrols during the day to dig on 118 in full view of the Chinese. They'd come off of the night time and waiting for the Chinese to attack. Then they would counterattack and grab the prisoners. And this was different battles went on different nights and things like that. And anyway, this was going on. So it was going on for about five nights. Different things was happening. And then Rosenberg...
Do you remember any of those things?
No. It was just we'd be at the base of the hill. I was I was doing it every other night. And then you see a bit of action. You see firing, you see grenades going off. But we weren't involved one little bit. We were just guarding.
Were you nervous out on your own as a sniper?
No. That surprised me, because I said no one was brave out there. But you could see, you could see 80 yards if someone moved. You were covered.
But with the light, couldn't they see you?
No, infrared.
It was infrared. Right, sorry, I didn't quite realise.
Sorry,
you.
I should have said
no,
that.
You probably did say, just missed
no, it. No, you're saying you were sitting inside of a bush or something along a path and they could see nothing. It was absolutely brilliant. And right now the battle started now, you see, on this particular night. I can't go on too long. This particular night, we'd gone out because I'd done five on the trot, and we was laying there, and we could hear fighting going on this hill. Now, what had happened now was that the engineers devised, I don't know what they were called, but they had a string of explosives that sounded like machine guns. They had strings of things that sounded like rifles and Brens, and they had strings that sounded like grenades. And they set all these tripwires up, and when the Chinese done their final assault up this hill, they hit these, and the hill just lit up. There was machine gun firing. You could see them running around, but they weren't getting wounded because it just bangs. And they were so confused as anything. And then they started shelling, and then our tanks opened up. And the tanks were our base, and they blasted the top of that hill with tracers, and it just exploded. And I was out there, and a runner from this section with a corporal, he came flying back to me, he said, Corp, he says, because I just called you Corp, Corp, he says, we've got to come back, we've got to go and help B Company.
Right? So it's B and C on the hill.
B and C, yes, we're doing the most of it, And we've started, I'd go back.
Now, what was the date of this? Do you know?
Yes, this was the night of the 2nd and 3rd of August. Right. I don't know if I got wounded on the night time, on the 2nd, or the daytime, or the 3rd. I think it was more of the 3rd, basically. And, of course, as we got up, I'm just with a runner, we're running back, and a barrage come over. And it blasted, and I got blew up in the air, and he got blew up in the air. When I landed, I could feel pain in my sides. I shouts out, I've been wounded. And the officer said, shut up. He said, keep hold of that weapon. So I got dragged up the hill by Corporal Critcher, because he was a corporal that was between the patrol and myself. And he said, oh, he said, you're bleeding. He says, let's take it off. Well, when he took my weapon to get the battery off me back, he undone the webbing belt and it couldn't come off. So he had to do my other webbing belt, and between it was a bit of shrapnel, he said about 3 inches long, had gone through the two belts and just penetrated my stomach, and it was stinging, so it was a bit of spent shrapnel, and it had gone through the two belts and just penetrated my stomach, just to make it like the side of the wall, to make it bleed. And so of course there was three others got injured or got wounded, so it was called off. They'd found out then that the B company had sorted their problems, that everyone was withdrawing, so we were now taken back to our position. Like,
you know. Did you need help? Or
I was on a stretcher until we got to the base of the hill, and the critter said, get off and walk. He said, we're not carrying you up there. He said, so I managed to walk up the hill, and there was a jeep there, and they said jeeps with stretchers either side, and there were two jeeps there, and the four of us were loaded on and taken back to Norwegian MASH.
Norwegian MASH?
Yes.
What was that?
Well, that's the MASH is the military cerebral hospital. I forget what they call it now. And
was it American or British?
This Norwegian.
Oh, it was. That's not the name of it. It was Norwegian. Yeah.
Yeah. It was the Norwegian MASH, and I got treated there, and then I got sent to the American.
What do you remember of the treatment?
Just a matter of bandaging it up, right? And they sent me to the American MASH, which was further back still. How far back, I don't know, right? Because you didn't go back. You didn't know where the positions were behind the lines. You just had no reason to go. They never sent you back anywhere. And they sent me back to the American MASH, where one of my mates turned up. He was the batman. His name was Alan Edgley, and he was a batman all the time. And apparently, that morning, or the morning before, he'd gone back with appendix. And they took his appendix out in the American MASH. And then he heard that Norfolk's were coming in. He wandered around, he'd seen me lying there. And he come up, and he said, when they come up, this nurse, whoever she was, came up with a dish with tweezers in it, told me to lie on my side, and stuck these tweezers in my side, trying to find a bit of shrapnel. Couldn't negotiate a bit, and they just applied it, and there was nothing there, because it had come out on the webbing belt, like, you know, so I just had a hole there, gone in about an inch, they reckon, which didn't penetrate my stomach. It was just flesh. It was a flesh wound.
So how were you in yourself?
Oh, I felt all right. Yeah, I was all right. They sent me back to, finally then I went back to the main echelon, which could have been B, even further back. And
to the hospital or to the echelons?
No, to the echelons. Right. I wasn't in hospital at all, to the echelons, all on the canvas. And I got interviewed by two officers to see the condition. My mate went in first and come out, and he said they're sending me to Curie. Then I went in, and they said to me, have you had any R&R, that was leave, to Tokyo? So I said, no. They said, have you had any leave? So I said, yes. I said, I had 2 days in Chon. They said, why two nights? I said, well, I got sent, the room was at the Samachon, I got sent on, they just come around in the morning, and said, you know, you're going on Incheon leave, Incheon R&R. And I said, I've done 2 nights. And the next morning, I'm having my breakfast, like, and someone comes in and shouts out, Latham, who's Latham? So I say, it's me. Pack up, you've got to go back. So I packed my kit and lorry and back there, and no one knew nothing about it.
Now, tell me about, well, we'll just drop this in while we're mentioning it. What was it like at Incheon leave camp?
Oh, it was cold. This was February time when I went back there. And the weather was freezing, but it was just tents, and you know, you just play football, games, or darts, and the food, and lazed around. It was just rest and recuperation, like the R&R, and it was just relaxation, that I didn't get enough of it.
And so these officers, you told the officers that?
I told that's all I had, and they said, oh, well, so we'll send you to Curie. Because I think the main reason was, in all, that Norfolk's had done their stint. After this Battle of 118, the Norfolk's come out of the line. A week later, I was out of the line reserve, because we were due to go back. And so I left the end of August. And so while I was in Curie, I was in hospital there for 3 weeks in total, under observation. No operations or nothing.
In Curie?
In Curie, yes. And then when I got discharged from Curie, while I was still in there, they should move the old red, white and blue to walk around in. And when they finally discharged me from the hospital, they sent us to a training camp to build us up again. And we was there for 3 weeks. And then...
Now, hang on.